Today is Valentine's Day. And I wanted to talk about kindness. And kindness as a practice. And this morning I didn't have a clear sense of what I would talk about. I wanted to talk in some way about the wise heart. And then I had lunch with my mom, staying there, and we just had a dialogue about kindness. And the talk came right out of that discussion, so I want to dedicate this talk to her. Her name is Bernice, and she's improving. So let me start with a few stories. Short stories about kindness. One of them comes from one of my students who said that when she was raising her daughter, she told her daughter, Sarah, over and over again, starting about age 2, whenever you can, choose kindness. It's much easier that way. And I'm sure continued that guidance. I'm sure it took many different forms. Just saying, choose kindness, probably was complemented by being very specific, giving examples and so forth. Second story from a friend I've known for a lot of years. I don't know if she still has it, I think so. But when I knew her the most, she had an answering machine. And her message was, of course, to leave the message. And then it said, and remember to be kinder to yourself than you think you need to be. And that message on the message machine is not copyrighted. Feel free to take that home or do something with it or be inspired or imitated or whatever. A third story. I was working with a practitioner at the Spirit Rock 1 month retreat last March. And she had been going through a hard time. And I don't know how it originated, whether it was in dialogue or her idea. When we talked just a little while ago, I told her I thought it was her idea, and she told me she thought it was my idea. But what she did for the whole month was she asked continually, what's the kind thing to do right now in the retreat? And that took many, many different forms, right? That would take, sometimes it would take her to do this practice, sometimes it would be to give herself slack. Sometimes it would be to rest and so forth. So it could take many, many forms. And I'll come back to some of those questions. And she's kept that going in daily life since then. And I find that just a marvelous guiding intention, isn't it? What's the kind thing to do right now? It reminds me of Julia Butterfly Hill, who sat in that redwood tree for many years. She talks about following the practice of asking, is my action coming out of love, as an ongoing practice? So I thought that I wanted to talk about this question, what's the kind thing to do? And use that as an organizing theme for a whole practice that we might do, or that we might augment our way of practicing by asking that question, or perhaps there's some other phrase that occurs to you, or maybe you would phrase it a little differently or do it differently. But it's really reminding ourselves to bring kindness and the kind heart to each moment. It's a beautiful summary of our practice. Sylvia Boorstein likes to speak of metta practice as the continual asking of the question, where is my heart right now? And it's a beautiful practice. So I want to really, for this talk, ask, what would that practice look like? If we fill that out and look at some of the intricacies and complexities of following a practice of asking, what's the kind thing to do right now? Or how, again, we could rephrase it, how can I be with kindness right now, moment to moment? How can I act out of kindness? And so the inquiry that takes that question as a lead will take us through some interesting questions. It'll take us through asking, what are some ways that we might follow that as a practice on retreat, in daily life? What are some of the issues that come up? One that I want to point to a lot is the counterpart of what, in relation to loving kindness and compassion and joy and equanimity, we call the near enemies. Are there distortions of kindness? And of course there are. What happens when kindness gets mixed with our shadows? Right? That's a big part of this practice, right? It's to look at how our intentions for kindness are sometimes genuine and sometimes distorted. And distorted shouldn't mean totally wrong. It should mean a mix of the genuine and something else. Maybe some confusion, some delusion, some distortion, some old habit. So I want to look at that. And I want to, in the process, also bring in this understanding that kindness has to be deeply integrated with wisdom and with embodiment. Some of the distortions will occur when that doesn't happen. When kindness is separated from wisdom and maybe becomes self-centered or is about being nice. Does anyone ever have any conditioning about being a nice person? I take by the small number of people who raised your hands that it's probably about 80%. So we will see. Okay, so that's the territory I want to go through. So it's really the aim is to give some sense of how to enhance our practice of kindness. And the last part of the talk, I want to actually be very specific about, here are several kinds of practices that will support that intention to bring kindness more into our moment-to-moment experience. Okay. That's my trajectory for tonight. So just reflect yourself now and ask yourself, when might you have experienced, either in yourself or witnessing in another person, a sense of someone acting kindly? Sort of responding to that question, what's the kind thing to do? And let's say acting genuinely kind. See what comes to mind. And see if you can formulate what comes to mind in one or two sentences at the most, one or two kind of brief sentences, because I want to hear from you, actually. So how would you formulate what came to you in one or two brief sentences? In other words, not a story. Please, let's take a few examples. Patty, and then remind me of your
name?
Linda. Liz.
Yeah. Linda.
Linda, yeah. Patty, please.
A friend who died recently, I'm the executor of the will, and I had to take care of all kinds of difficult business. And another friend took 3 days off work to spend time voluntarily to help, just out of the kindness as a last gift to our mutual friend, to help with all those details.
Right, so someone at some sacrifice helping to take care of what the details after a friend's death. Right? Yeah. Please.
Helping somebody new to Sangha feel welcomed in here, comfortable, and that they truly are a part of the Sangha.
Yeah, helping to welcome someone to the community and do one's best to welcome the person in such a way that the person feels well connected and as much as part of things initially as possible. Right, thank you. Please, Mary.
Listening to someone talk, saying things that I really do want to hear, and really thinking that whatever I would say, what came to mind first, I realized wouldn't be helpful, wouldn't be kind, and really all I should do is just sit and listen.
Right, so this we would call intermediate or advanced practice of kindness. Because it's a great question, because, you know, kindness is easier when things are going smoothly, right? Seems to be. Can I make a commitment to kindness that extends to challenging situations, difficulties, when people are giving you negativity, what seems like negativity coming your way? And so you were talking about receiving, what, I forgot the language, disagreeable coming your way?
Well, it was just stuff that was just plain hard to hear.
Some words that were hard to hear, won't say anything about the accuracy, hard to hear, and you checked on what was about to come out of your mouth for, according to the kindness criterion. It's a technical term. Yeah, the kindness, and you used the kindness criterion and found your would-be words wanting. And did not say them. So in this act, in this case, what would the kind thing to be? The most kind thing to be would be to stay silent. So beautiful. Yeah, beautiful account. Yeah. Maybe one or two more. And, you know, don't worry about saying something kind you did for fear of enhancing pride. Please.
I sent out a civic emergency call for help last Monday, and four people in the Sangha responded, even though they're working.
Yeah.
And one of them was way out of the area. They were just there right away to help me.
Right. So making an appeal for kind of response in an emergency and receiving a number of responses, including from someone who came from quite a distance or helped from quite a distance, right? They're quite beautiful. And I was very impressed most recently spending actually three of the last 4 days, at least in part, in the hospital in Petaluma, just how kindness was just so much there in that setting from so many people. And it felt very, very simple. Not all the time, but quite a lot. So we can look at those kind of situations and have a sense of when there's genuine kindness. And I was thinking of what might that response be to the question, what's the kind thing to do in a retreat context? And I was thinking, and here I'll start to both look at what appears to be genuine kindness, and then start to see how it starts getting a little bit, the kindness can be a little bit mixed with other motives, okay? Because that's a big part of our practice of kindness, is to see what else is there. We often talk about the heart practices, like metta practice or compassion practice or joy practice or equanimity practice. We could include as well forgiveness practice or gratitude practice. We often talk about those practices as purification practices because we're continually intending in metta practice kind of warmth, wishing well. That's the practice. And then we don't always get that. We have that intention, we get other stuff. Sometimes we get the exact opposite. And especially if one does a retreat, one finds that happening. That one is inclined in that direction, but other things come up. Or, you know, one uses phrases and something in you says, you know, you have a phrase saying, may I be happy? And maybe some inner voice says, who are you fooling? You know, you'll be moderately happy, but you're not going to be really happy. Be realistic. And then that comes up, right? And then we, oh, what was that about? Where did that voice come from? You know, is that my mother? Or, not my mother, but... You know, where did that voice come from? And so that's what we do. So what's the kind thing to do? It might be in a retreat context, actually, someone would say, I want to do the heart practices. I want to do more metta right now. I want to incline in that direction. Or someone might say, I'm starting to be self-judgmental. I'm finding judgment come up in my practice. Let me not follow that. Let me follow kindness and give myself slack on that issue. Or really say, I am not going to follow the judgmental voice. Kindness often will take that form. It will take the form of not following our own internal voice or not following our own external voice being unkind, right? Because this is really where the heart practices are integrated with mindfulness. And we can track, oh, there's that voice, there's the judgment. So any practice of kindness is going to have very good mindfulness. They get integrated. You see that we have to have the capacity to track what's there, to see all the different voices. It's not simply a matter of acting in a certain way, but we need the mindfulness continually to monitor what comes up. So being kind could take a very simple form. I'm really tired, and I know I really need a nap, and I'm going to miss the next sitting and take a nap at this retreat. It could come out of genuine kindness. Here, we also start raising the question of how do we distinguish between genuine kindness and kindness which is maybe coming out of some distortion or represents a distortion. So another example I thought of as the retreat is, it's been a really hard day. I think I'll have seconds at this meal, right? And then, and again, here we want to really start inquiring. Is that kindness or what's there? Is that a strategy to avoid actually being present with what's happening? Again, this starts connecting with how we may think we're being kind in daily life, right? And so that having a little more food could be kind, but it also could be something else. It could be a kind of a strategy to use kindness as a way to justify some behavior that one knows is not wise. Right? Again, I don't want to make too much of the example, but more the question that comes up. And then in this context, we start seeing enough to start asking, how do I know when there are distortions? We can do the same thing with daily life. We have some examples of genuine kindness, what seemed as far as we knew to be genuine kindness. And we can also bring in some examples where the kindness doesn't seem so pure, as it were. This is from Mark Twain. It's a beautiful quotation. This came from the internet, not from my mother. Okay. Kindness is the language the blind can see and the deaf can hear. Isn't that beautiful? Kindness is the language the blind can see and the deaf can hear. So in daily life, we might have had a hard day and say, what's the kind thing to do right now? And again, it's going to be different for different ones of us. It might be, what's going to really help me come back to balance? Maybe it would be to be with beauty, or to go dancing, or to talk to this friend, right? I think all of those could be very genuine. acts of kindness. And again, we have a sense of what would be genuinely kind in relation to others. It might be to, again, especially offer help where someone's in need. Someone's sick, someone has some kind of emergency. It might be to follow that impulse to generosity, to kindness. It might be very much to, as I was saying earlier, not to follow negative thoughts. We might not think of that as kindness, but that's one of the kindest things we can do. There are negative thoughts developing, not to follow them. It's deeply kind, right? So you can see that we start to see that we can have kindness in at least two forms. One of them is a positive action, and the other one is refraining from the negative, right? That's important, because we can actually see that both are options when we think of acting kindly. It's not just about acting in a positive, so-called way. Okay, some examples of what seem to be near enemies of kindness, or we might say distorted versions of kindness. A story from a friend. He has lived in a wheelchair for a long time and was at a supermarket, and a woman came up to him and said, "I admire you so much. If I was in your condition, I would kill myself." Is that genuine kindness?
No.
So there's some distortion there. And that actually we can remember the teachings of the Brahmavihara, the four so-called divine abodes or stations of the heart, loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. Each of them are talked about classically as having these near enemies, and we call them sometimes in teaching the metta retreat, we sometimes use different language, we call them the near opposites or the near misses. And the near part is important because they're not simply distortions. They're a combination of the genuine thing and distortion, so it means that we're maybe halfway there, but we're not fully there. That woman probably had a very good impulse, right? There was something that was genuine there. There might have been really a kind impulse, but she wasn't in touch with her aversion. And so, in a way, the aversion got mixed with kindness, and it came out in a way which certainly didn't feel kind to the person receiving it, right? So it was a mixture, in this case, of aversion plus kindness yields something distorted. And we can think of other ways that occurs. For example, the near enemy or near miss of loving kindness is grasping. So we can think of some ways that kindness can be grasping. You may think of examples right now. It could be, I'm kind because I want something in return, right? That's common, isn't it? Right, the kindness gets mixed with some wanting, or we would say clinging to the outcome in some way, right? That would be, we want to check for that. So if we're interested in cultivating kindness, we have to have almost this map of the possible distortions and name them and put them on your refrigerator and look for them and so forth. So, and the near enemy of compassion classically is pity, which I think probably was exemplified by that example, by the story in the supermarket, right? Pity involves aversion. It's distorted, but again, there's something of the genuine thing. Something of the genuine thing there. So I might be kind and want to publicize that I have just been kind. That's why it might have been a little bit awkward to ask you to raise your hands and talk about kind actions, right? Because am I doing this to show off how kind I am? Right. So we want to look for that. We want to look for when I do a kind act, is there something there in which I'm looking for recognition? That's going to distort it, right? That's going to tend to distort it. Either that I'm wanting something, in return, or what I want in return could be recognition, could be something else, right? So we want to look for those near enemies. Another kind of distortion, I think, is being kind in a way which is overly nice. It could be, in a way, not being skilled, thinking that I'll be kind when someone else is acted in a way that maybe takes a firm response or a strong response. And I think, as in your example, actually trying to do nothing is a very good way station, right? But as we get more skilled at kindness, we also have to become skilled at bringing kindness into our response when things are difficult. It's a very difficult practice. How can I keep an attitude of kindness when someone judges me, someone insults me, someone triggers me, someone pushes my buttons? Kindness is not just for fair weather days. Our practice is radical. We make a radical commitment to kindness every moment. That's not a modest intention. I don't know if all of you knew that you had signed up for that. But that is the intention of the tradition. That's what we're investigating. And of course, we proceed based on where we're at in our own practice. But the trajectory does include bringing in kindness when difficult things are coming at you. And so one distortion could be to not, in a sense, be strong or stand up for yourself and take kindness as a kind of defense mechanism. Again, I think it's valuable as a way station towards this very difficult ability to be kind when things are difficult, one's triggered, and so forth. Not very easy. We could do a whole session on that. And I think I have, in the past, done some sessions on heart practices in difficult times. It's one of my favorite topics. Another example might be where I'm kind to others, but not to myself. What do we call it? We sometimes call that codependence, right? Where is that codependence? Have I got that right?
I think it's a manifestation of it.
Manifestation. Yeah, where I'm actually the kindness, I think I'm a kind person, I'm acting kindly to others, but I don't take care of myself. Very common, and particularly gendered, probably way more for women than for men, right? You know, it's part of the old conditioning. And yeah, there's a lot there. So that looking into the distortion is a key part of our practice, right? So just to really have a lookout, you know, wake up in the morning and say, I will be looking out today for near misses of kindness. Doesn't sound quite as sexy as being filled with gushing love, but it's actually very good, very important. And of course, that's more the looking for the challenges. And we also want to have that intention to continually ask, what's the kind thing to do? So you see, we're kind of rounding out a practice of kindness. And I'm going to bring in some further practices. One way to frame this, and I want to bring in a few other pieces, I mentioned that I think kindness has to be deeply integrated with wisdom and with embodiment. Part of that wisdom is going to be to see these distortions. A lot of the distortions are related maybe to seeing, oh, I'm seeing self-image connect with this kindness. So it's the insight into the arising of a strong sense of self, right? And being able really to notice that. That's one of our core forms of insight, seeing into the nature of the self. That's going to be linked with the kindness and wisdom about the structures of the self, about our habitual patterns, about our forms of reactivity connected with dukkha. These are all have to be there for a mature practice of kindness. We have to have the wisdom element very strongly there. And again, that's brought out by this theme of looking for the near enemies. It's also brought out in the teaching of the Divine Abodes by seeing that there are these four qualities: loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. And the equanimity carries the wisdom aspect. And they all, and to be fully mature, each of those has to have all the other three integrated with it. That's very significant. So loving kindness, and I think we sometimes make a mistake by teaching loving kindness in an isolated way. It really is at its best taught fully integrated with these other three. And I know some of my colleagues have been talking about offering more retreats where one can actually learn all four. It's quite an important point, because you could see that it's, and, you know, when we teach the metta retreat, we do emphasize the integration of mindfulness and wisdom, but it really comes out quite organically when you bring these together, especially the equanimity, which is more of the wisdom factor. We like to think of equanimity as having the qualities of a really wise grandmother who has seen everything and is still really kind. That's equanimity. That brings in the wisdom factor. I have seen everything. Nothing's going to surprise me. Nothing's going to knock me around. You know, I have been there, if I can personify a wise grandmother. Which,
yeah. What do you mean by embodiment?
Well, I haven't got there yet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Okay, I will. Yeah. Maybe just one or two other aspects about the wisdom part of it, and then I'll get to embodiment. Okay. Teachings really are that as we go deeper, we see that the kindness is part of our deep being. And that mature kindness is fully integrated with wisdom. And with, I would say, with embodiment. And we see this in some of the teachings. You know, there's a teaching in I think some of the commentaries on metta, where it's said that metta is linked with what's called the brightly shining factor of mind and heart, which is there for all beings. Something brightly shining beneath the surface, even for people who have done very awful actions. They still have in their being that bright shining. They're just disconnected from it, or it gets obscured. And so the roots of kindness are deep in us. And you know, there's that book that I think I've sometimes referred to called A Paradise Built in Hell by Rebecca Solnit, where she looks at natural disasters mostly, but also 9/11. And she finds that in those situations, contrary to often to what the public authorities say will happen, which is the, you know, chaos and so forth, actually, uniform kindness is virtually always the rule when there's not a basic background of fear, which there is sometimes for political reasons. But when there's just a disaster like the 1906 San Francisco earthquake, story after story of kindness after kindness. This was also what people experienced after 9/11 in New York. I've talked with people who were there, and they said it was the best time to be in New York for the month after 9/11. It's just such kindness. I like to take this as a sign of what's in our deeper nature. This is from Dr. King talking about love. When I speak of love, I am not speaking of some sentimental and weak response. I am speaking of the force which all of the great religions have seen as the supreme unifying principle of life. So kindness in its depths starts to be part of the structure of the universe, the structure of our deep, structure of our minds, structure of being. Love is somehow the key that unlocks the door which leads to ultimate reality, he says. This is a theme which we find in Hinduism, Islam, Christianity, Judaism, and Buddhism about ultimate reality. That's Dr. King. From the sage Nisargadatta, wisdom is knowing I am nothing. Love is knowing I am everything. Between the two, my life moves. From Joseph Goldstein, the more we practice compassionate responsiveness, and I would say kind responsiveness, the more easily we recognize the selfless quality of the mind's essence. the more easily we recognize the innate empty wakefulness of the mind's essential nature, the more spontaneously compassionate we are in all situations. So this kindness is deep in our being, connected with our wisdom. The danger for Westerners is that it becomes more of an idea and that we don't embody it. So, a few words on embodiment. One of my experiences was very interesting in my own development was that I think I had a very naturally kind heart to develop. I enjoyed talking with my mom and I said, think of people who you think are kind. Who are they? And her first response was, you. That's nice. But so I think there has always been a kind of a natural kindness there. Get covered over in different ways, a lot of the near misses and so forth. And I could know that I was kind sometimes by crying at movies, when you know, although I had been trained as a young man not to cry, I still sometimes cried at movies. Something is there, you know. But over the years, what I found was that my heart could be quite wide open. And I could have a pretty clear mind, but I could also get knocked around. My wide open heart would sometimes feel like it was being ambushed, or sometimes be in a lot of pain. And that wide open heart didn't necessarily translate into skillful action and interaction. I came to see that it wasn't fully embodied, and also, very significantly, that it wasn't centered. In the martial arts, there's this notion of being centered and grounded. And I would say that that kind heart needs to do both. This is really the two main aspects of embodiment I'm talking about. Groundedness and centeredness. The groundedness, I think, is being present to the body, connected with the earth. Having that, and in a way, having that center in the body complements the center in the heart and the mind. Because what I found when I was being knocked around was that I didn't have another reference point. And as I get more grounded in the body, I would find that I could actually have a different reference point. The heart could be open, but wasn't all there was. When I would get knocked around, it was as if, oh, my heart is open and I feel pain and I didn't have any way to support it really. I think, is this making some sense? I think it's quite common. Probably if I asked for hands, a lot of us would raise their hands for this being a tendency. And so grounding further in the body, which one can do in all sorts of ways, walking meditation, all sorts of body practices, meditative body practices, yoga, and so forth, to really be more in our bodies. A big project in an increasingly virtual world, right? Not easy. And then the centeredness is a little bit different. The centeredness is particularly, for example, for me, it was really having the center in, as in the martial arts, in the hara area. And being able, when someone said something that felt attacking or that was really sad, it really hurt my heart, not to just go into a triggered heart and kind of collapse, which I think was a tendency, but to actually have that center be able to hold what was happening in the heart in a bigger sphere of awareness, where it wasn't, where it wouldn't collapse really, where it could hurt. I could know it was hurting, but I could be more present. And I think anyone who's interested in developing kindness further has to have those qualities, I think, of groundedness and centeredness. And they take time to develop. It's not easy. The centeredness, again, can come in different ways. For me, I actually did meditative practices of first bringing the attention to my belly, actually for a number of years, till it got very strong. One of my Tibetan teachers, Sokni Rinpoche, he said, most Westerners have their energy up in their heads, and they don't have their energy centered where it should be, in the belly area. He said, this is the reason why my students have not been making good progress. He said that after 15 years of teaching. But there was something difficult about questions of embodiment for Westerners. And so practice something like Qigong, amazing for centeredness, both centeredness and grounding. Simple practices that we did, do those 20 minutes a day, they'll go a long way towards helping in these ways, especially with it, you know, done regularly with a teacher. Okay, so let me finish by talking about a few other practices, some further practices to develop kindness. We've mentioned a few along the way. So certainly the heart practices like metta, very, very helpful. We want to start to have a listing of the barriers to kindness that are most common for us. What are the barriers to kindness for me? Are they the judgmental mind? Are they getting caught in polarization with another person? When I survey my own patterns, what are the patterns which make kindness hard? We have to study that, do a kind of inventory, have this list, and then have ways of working with each of them. Being skilled at forgiveness could be very, very helpful, very helpful practice for kindness. See where we get stuck in, like I said, polarization, or stuck in the unkind heart. Forgiveness is a very crucial practice. Simply being distracted can take us out of kindness, right? Simply being thinking a lot. And so our ordinary practices of mindfulness are very helpful. Another practice which is very simple is the practice of intention. Can I take, as my student took, the practice of kindness and say, continually say many times during the day, what's the kind thing to do? Can I work with the intention, the kindness, a number of times a day? I work with intentions typically four times a day for about 2 or 3 minutes at a time. You know, before breakfast, the morning, the afternoon, the evening, typically. Working with intentions, we have to remind ourselves, you can have all the intentions this evening about kindness, but we have to make it real, right? We have to have the intentions operative in daily life. So intention practice, very, very helpful, until it gets more and more internalized. Another practice could be working with the inspiration of someone whom we take to be really kind. We can bring that person to mind. In a difficult situation, we can remember that person. We can do practices, like I think I've maybe once or twice done here, where we bring to mind ourselves in a difficult situation, visualize yourself, or in an ordinary situation, bring to mind someone who's kind, who's really, really kind, either someone you actually know, or a public figure, or you could even bring, you know, someone like Kuan Yin, human being, you know, more an archetypal being. Bring that person to mind, have that person enter your body, visualize what you're like when that person enters your body and guides you to be kind. It's a very, very beautiful practice. We can do it in that way. Obviously, we can choose to do one kind action every day. Beautiful practice. What would that be like? Okay, it's 9 p.m. I haven't done a kind action today. What should I do? Okay, let me finish with just one reading. Okay, I actually had a few. I'm just going to do one of them to finish. This is from a former student of mine named Tom Potterfield. Does anyone know Tom Potterfield? Tom was a student of mine who became president of the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology, and served in that capacity for at least 5 or 6 years. Very sadly, about 6+ years ago, he developed pancreatic cancer at age 54 or something. And he died about a year later. And this was about 6 months before he died, he wrote this. And I thought, I'll end with this. This is really about simple kindness. Dear friends, the past few weeks have been tough. The chemo treatments take a lot of willpower to navigate. In addition to knocking me down physically, they also bring about an emotional and spiritual darkness that drags me to the borderlands, a dry, barren, lonely place of scarred memories, dead tiredness, and frayed hopes. It takes all my strength to grind it through and not give in to the temptation to give up, which gets very strong after 5 or so days of heavy chemo side effects. My work is always a great help with this by dragging me out of my head to focus on something far more important than me. I am so grateful for that aspect of my life. Also, I have found that almost every time something wonderful comes along to restore hope. Sometimes it is just his wife Donna's smile or his daughter Katie's loving presence. Sometimes it's a beautiful vista with some happy cows or horses. It could be one of my canine buds giving an especially sweet and enthusiastic greeting, or a student doing well and having a great experience at the school. And sometimes it is something more dramatic and amazing. This past weekend, I had a big problem. I have a PICC line, a small tube that is threaded through a vein from my arm across my chest to my heart. It prevents damage to my veins from the chemo infusions. It sounds creepier than it really is. On Sunday evening, the damn thing broke and I had to go into the emergency room. Of course, the specialist in such things wasn't on duty and I had to wait in the emergency room until Monday morning. I was pretty miserable. It was yet another reminder of how far from normal my life is, how much this disease has overtaken my life and limited it. I was feeling down and sorry for myself. I felt spiritually dry. I prayed for some lightness and joy to come to me and to feel reconnected to my spiritual life. During the night in the ER, a janitorial staffer came into my room to remove the trash. I said hello, and our eyes connected for just a fraction of a second. Jose left the room and came back with two heated blankets and proceeded to tuck me in very gently and carefully. He then told Donna and me about his own struggles and about how people praying for him saved his life. We talked about faith and hope, and then he went on his way. A brief and lovely moment that lifted my spirits and made me very thankful. There are amazing people everywhere, and sometimes they rise up to give a hand when you need it most. It's good to try to be a person like that for others. Thank you, Tom. Maybe just we have a few minutes for questions, then we'll go to our meta cards. Any comments or questions, reflections, please?
Yeah, I had a thought in the way of distortions. There's a difference between the kind of compassion that you just spoke about with this janitor for your friend, and something you might call commiseration.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like jumping into it with the person, maybe.
Yeah.
And sometimes more about the one who's commiserating.
That's right. Yeah, that's beautiful. Really, it's really, and this is where our mindfulness comes in. It's like the example you gave is one of maybe where I'm commiserating more for me than for the person. That, I think, was the implication. And it's really our mindfulness can help us to track the motivation. Or we can have a moment of honesty and say, what's my motivation right now? And again, we don't want to judge these near misses and say, that's bad, right? Rather take it as halfway there, or take it as learning, or this is how we learn. We don't learn by getting it perfect. That's not how human learning occurs, right? We learn by moving from our starting point some and seeing how we can improve, right? And many of us don't want to be told that we have any room for improvement. Does anyone relate to that? Okay, I'll take that again as being 80%. Okay, thank you. Please. Yeah.
Sometimes wanting to be kind runs headlong into, for me, wanting to be honest.
Yeah.
And there really are headlong. It's not even.
That's right.
And I'm thinking a mild example is, there are harsher examples, but a mild example is just leaving a review, for example, on Angie's List for a vendor whose service you thought wasn't good. So it feels like it's a good thing to tell others about this vendor. On the other hand, it doesn't feel kind to say these things.
Right. So kind of interesting question of, you know, in this case, an online review, but it could be a similar issue come up with talking to a friend about something in that person's life and so forth. And two things come to mind that are helpful. And I like the way where, you know, there can be a lot of energy looking into these near misses, right? And we can chronicle. Like when I did that book on the engaged spiritual life, I was working with, like, for each of the divine abodes, one near miss. That's what we have classically. So equanimity, the near miss is indifference. When I look carefully, I found, like, for equanimity, 10 near misses. There were a lot of, like, resignation, you know, that complacency. Those could look like equanimity, but there's some distortion. So I found 10. We can find a lot of these. So with what you bring up, two things come to mind. One is that in our speech practice, we have these multiple guidelines. And it's very interesting. Kindness is one of the four guidelines, coming out of a warm heart. But it has to be integrated with three others, namely truthfulness, helpfulness, and good timing. And so all four have to be there for it to be skillful speech. Kindness by itself tend to be distorted. Truthfulness by itself will tend to be distorted if it doesn't have the other three. That's interesting, right? That's another way we can guide our practice. And then the other point that occurred to me is that I think it's a whole inquiry in itself to ask how to combine truthfulness and kindness in difficult moments. Another way we could talk about it is to say, what does tough kindness look like? Right? We talk about tough love. There's such a thing as tough kindness. Again, this is going to be relatively advanced practice for a lot of us, right? So we have to have the foundation where the kindness is easier. But it's interesting, there's going to be a whole set of areas or concerns or context where that's going to come up. And how can I get better at being kind, but also saying things that someone doesn't want to hear? Some of us have that in our professions, right? Those of you who are therapists or teachers or parents have to master that to some extent, right? You have to have kindness, but be willing to say something quite difficult. And then, again, if I was coming next week, we would talk about that more. Yeah. Let me take at most maybe one more, and then we'll go to our meta cards. Any other comment? Or even if someone had some experience from working with that, how do you combine kindness and saying something that the other person doesn't want to hear, please? Yeah.
In dealing with some difficult people over time, I mean, over a long time, like a mother,
yeah,
that was not as lovely. The idea of being quiet and not saying anything doesn't make it go away,
right,
bad feelings. But to say something wouldn't go anywhere.
Yeah. So how to deal with the difficult situation? I think there definitely are moments where the most skillful and kind thing to do is to say nothing. I think that, as in Mary's example earlier, I think a very good example, right? And so sometimes that is skillful in the moment. I think two things occur to me. One of them is that if it's a longer-term relationship, we can try to work with things. A lot of it's going to depend on the nature of the relationship. Some relationships, the other person doesn't want to hear something. And it's going to depend on the context, whether it's skillful to say it. Maybe in some professional context, the other person doesn't want to hear it, it is skillful to say it. If you're a therapist or a teacher, it may be important to say it, even though the other person doesn't want to. So the context is going to determine a lot. Some contexts it'd be wise to stay silent, some contexts it'd be wise to speak. So it's going to be variable in that sense. And if there's a longer term relationship, we might work up to it. We also, of course, want to work up to being more and more skillful ourselves. That's part of the learning trajectory as well. So it's complex, isn't it? You know, we may say, well, I'm not skillful enough to do that now, but I'll work on this, and maybe in 6 months I will be. And maybe the problem will not have been resolved by then, as with many issues. So, great questions. I'm going to go to the meta cards now, and if we have any more time, we'll go back, but I want to give the time for the cards now.
There's just two.
Okay.